Dombrowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC, 1-800-222-5222. If you would like to be on the program today, talking about all the things that are going on in the news, what a day. Now, I will get to the Comey testimony on Capitol Hill because there were a number of delicious gems that were dropped, little nuggets. And I think that the most interesting parts of the Comey testimony aren't being really talked about. I'll give you a clue. It's not the nausea. All right. We're not going to talk about that, although that was pretty funny. Now, what about this budget? Got passed today. $1.1 trillion gets us through September, October. And now, on the heels of that success, air quotes are gratis included, do not cost any extra money on top of that $1.1 trillion, we have word that the repeal and replace of Obamacare might happen tomorrow. Well, the Associated Press is saying there's a deal as of right now, Wednesday night. I don't know. Seems the big impasse here, if you don't know, is the issue of these pre-existing conditions and the mandate itself. The Republicans want to do away with the mandate. Because the grand barter, the original deal with Obamacare, the way they were going to make this thing work, and I'll explain to you why it would never work, but a way it was sold to us was, okay, we're going to make insurance companies insure people. We're going to make them insure sick people. We're going to make them insure healthy people. We're going to make sure they insure tall people, short people, round people, thin people, whatever it is. They're going to insure everyone. Especially if that person comes in the door and they're practically dead, you have to insure them. And in exchange for that requirement that an insurance company extend coverage to any applicant, any and every applicant, what was the deal? There was a mandate, right? You and I, we had to go out and, you know, one way or the highway, find a way to buy coverage. We must buy coverage. We're compelled to purchase this product. And what happens if we don't buy the product, right? You pay the fine. Well, so let's start with the first part of this problem of why this is such hocus pocus. I think people really don't understand what insurance is. I've railed against this before, but just please bear with me. If this is old hat, hang in there because I've got some new stuff for you too, I promise. See, insurance, wow. Supposing, look, I talk about Sweet James all the time. If you're on the freeway and you're cruising along and some goober runs into you, hits you, right? And now when do you get insurance? I'm just going to throw this out there. What if you just get rear-ended on the freeway, big damage to your car? In fact, not just damage, your car is on fire. Your car literally is burning to the ground right in front of you. They're on the shoulder, on the 405. People are stopping. They're taking pictures. They're taking selfies of themselves with your car in the background on fire. And you're sitting there, you're going, this guy that hit me. Oh, but let's just say the person runs away, flees the scene. You go, guy, you know what I need? I need car insurance, right? That's how it works. But stop me, by the way, stop me if you think I'm wrong, okay? No, that's not how it works, of course. You don't buy insurance after an event that requires insurance to pay for it has occurred. It doesn't work this way. It's something you buy preventively, right? You don't You don't purchase insurance on your house after it's burned to the ground. Doesn't work like that with your car. It doesn't work like that with life insurance. You don't buy life insurance after, you know, you die. Hi, yeah, sorry, you know, my husband's dead. He died this morning. I'd really like to get some really good term life insurance. What rates can you? No! It's not how it works. There's a science behind it. I'm not a numbers person. They're actuarial people, you know, these actuaries, right, is what they're called. Wonky, nerdy people with slide rules figuring out, you know, what numbers go into it. And it's a business model that has worked for centuries, okay? It's nothing new. Insurance. So why is it when it comes to health insurance, we turn the whole thing around on its head and we go, oh, yeah. Yeah, somebody comes in the door and their house is already burned down, their car is already smashed, and their you know, the life insurance principal is dead. Oh yeah, make those companies sell them the product. The whole point of how insurance works is that you charge more for higher risk people. So that would be someone who has perhaps worse health or is older, pays more than a younger person. Okay, so doing away with all of this. Now the state is involved. Now we've got the government involved in it. And so the people that support government doing and managing this whole, you know, Obamacare thing are telling us, but see, Sam, you don't understand. Obama was brilliant. He wanted to solve this problem, and he solved it by putting a bunch of people into the marketplace, right, that weren't previously insured. So it's not like Allstate or State Farm or whatever other insurance company you have for you know, property casualty. You know, it doesn't require people to buy insurance. Now, I'd say, first of all, that's hocus pocus, because in California, you're required to buy liability coverage, right? We know this. We're required to buy insurance, car insurance. So it kind of exists there too. I will tell you, insurance companies would not be able to make money in this business. And I'm no fan of insurance companies, but I understand how they work. And be very difficult for them to operate if they were forced to give a teenager who has five accidents, who drives drunk every day, the same rate as a 45-year-old, you know, single, you know, I don't know, just a priest who commutes one day a week to the farmer's market to buy some delicious radishes. I don't know. I mean, do you understand? There are different levels of risk. It's true in any type of insurance. So anyway, the plan here was the mandate. Well, do you know what happened with the mandate? What happened with the mandate is nobody wanted the insurance. The insurance got really expensive because the insurance companies said, look, if we have to insure really, really sick people, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to get some healthy. We're going to get some sick. So we're going to charge everybody the going rate for people who are on the sicker side, just to be sure, because, you know, we don't want to go bankrupt. And then another thing happened. So rates went up and it became cheaper, less expensive to pay the penalty. No, it did. I mean, this is a recognized fact. People are paying the penalty. Because the penalty, I think, is somewhere, I mean, it's almost an absurdly ridiculous fraction of what it is to pay coverage. In California, most places, it's something like an eighth of what it would be to pay your annual premium. So people are paying the penalty. Who's paying the penalty, though? That's right. Healthy people. The people who don't need health insurance. You know, kids in their 20s who think they're invincible. I was there once. And who is buying health insurance, by the way? The sickies, right? Everybody who needs it. So it's just the thing, it doesn't work. And when I'm listening to this, when I'm listening to these Republicans agonize about, oh, but we have to protect pre-existing conditions. That's another one. Did you see the Jimmy Kimmel bit on Monday? Look, I have three kids. I sympathize with anyone. A minute I see a kid who's hurt, I start crying too. So Jimmy Kimmel went on his show, and in the opening monologue Monday night, he talked about his son had been born and started to turn purple in the hotel and in the hospital, excuse me, and basically it was discovered that he'd had a congenital heart defect. And the doctors whisked him into surgery and performed a life-saving operation on his son. And if you didn't see it, it's touching, of course, because can you imagine? I can't, but it's terrible. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to spoil anything. The kid survived, is doing great. But Kimmel didn't save a minute here to immediately turn it into a political statement on the need to keep Obamacare, keep the Affordable Care Act. And he said, you know, before 2014, if you were born with congenital heart disease like my son was, there was a good chance you would never be able to get health insurance because you had a pre-existing condition. You were born with a pre-existing condition. And he went on with the usual leftist stuff about it shouldn't matter how much money you make and da-da-da. And I'm not even going to get into the whole thing that he was over in a children's hospital in L.A. that's funded almost exclusively with charity dollars. We have Chalk here in Orange County. Phenomenal work. And I look, these are causes that I personally am heavily involved with, March of Dimes and the charity here that sponsors our children's hospital. But I'm going to tell you this. With all due respect, I don't think he understands what a pre-existing condition is. I don't think a lot of people do. I think that a lot of people are talking about healthcare and they are literally talking out of their monies. First of all, a pre-existing condition, there's two ways of look. There's two definitions, two working definitions. It's important to kind of understand where these definitions fit. Because you have an objective standard. And then you've got something called the prudent person standard. But both of them have to do with whether or not you know about the condition. So when a kid is born to insured parents, I don't want to split any hairs here. That kid's insured, number one. Number two, it's not a pre-existing condition until you know about it. And the difference between the two standards is, in one of them, it's a little bit more narrow. It's the objective standard is, did you get a diagnosis? For example, did you have blood work done and it says you have AIDS? Okay, you know about it. The other is a prudent person standard. It's a little bit broader. It's, did you have symptoms, you know, like lesions? I don't know what AIDS symptoms might be, but did you have any kind of symptoms that would make you think, well, geez, you know what? I've just been with 120 people in the last 6 days. Maybe I have this condition. Prudent person. In either way, it doesn't have to do the whole concept of pre-existing conditions, the thing that all these politicians are rattling on about. It doesn't have anything to do with your predisposition, with your genetic history, with who you are, you know, what your health risks are and everything. It has everything to do with, did you go to the doctor? Or were you reasonably aware that you had something going on that you now want to get insurance for? That's all that is. And the Kimmel example that it didn't just happen on a show. Everyone's talking about it. And everybody's going, oh, yeah, Jimmy's right. You know, exactly. Can you imagine if it weren't for Obamacare, that little baby would have had a pre-existing condition. And as sad as that scenario is, I'm going to tell you, it's totally an inaccurate statement of what pre-existing conditions are. So I from what I understand in this latest iteration of the healthcare bill here, what the Republicans are doing is that they want to keep some protections of it. Anyway, when we come back, I'll take you through the bill, just some of the broad strokes of it, because it's not exactly clear what's going to come out in this final version tomorrow. And I'll explain what the next steps are. But again, don't hold your breath. Even the Republicans are talking like total giveaway socialists here. So anyway, pre-existing condition of politician syndrome. There it is. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Yeah, I don't know exactly all the finer points of this bill because it's evolved so many times. It's this moving target. It's kind of how it works with legislation. When you're pleasing different people and different factions, as it was with this Ryan Care, Trump Care bill, also known as the American Health Care Act, which now appears to be up for another vote tomorrow. And it seems also that they've got the votes. At least that's what the little birdie told me. Apparently, what the one thing, little tweak to the bill here that is significant is that it's going to let states escape the current requirement that insurers charge the same to healthy and seriously ill customers. And this is obviously, look, you don't have real health insurance if you mandate the same rates for everybody across the board. There are different risks, different rates. And I explained that in the last segment. But now there were now moderate Republicans. See, because the first time this thing went in, it was about 2 months ago that it had to be withdrawn. Remember, kind of failed, went up in flames. And the problem back then was you had the conservatives, you had, you know, the House Freedom Caucus were insisting that these type of very left wing vestiges of Obamacare be stripped from the bill. So that then when they began to get stripped from the bill, what happened? It's a seesaw effect. And you had now the more moderate Republicans in Congress starting to whine and cry about how this was not, you know, compassionate conservatism. So now two guys, Representatives Fred Upton from Michigan and Billy Long from Montana, they've added an amendment, and it would provide $8 billion over 5 years to help some people who have pre-existing medical conditions to afford coverage. Now, what this is really just a giveaway. It's a little thing where the president is able to – they met with Trump. That's a little side note on here. They went to the White House and they're really fighting. The White House is fighting for every vote on this thing. It's mano a mano. As a side note, by the way, I don't remember Obama being this engaged with Congress. Do you remember that? You know, if there is, you know, signature legislation, even when it came to the Affordable Care Act, he had that round table with Republicans where he basically told John McCain to go sit in the back of the bus. Hey, John, we won the election. I'm really happy that you're here talking, but shut up. I mean, that's basically, remember that? That's basically how it went. And then, of course, the bill itself, I don't think was written with a lot of input from the White House. But regardless, when it came time to pass, it was a full House. Everybody was involved. But later, when there was opposition from both Democrats and, of course, some Republicans, I remember, you know, Obama would just be very aloof, very disengaged. Interesting that here Trump really is fighting for every vote. He wants to see this done. The problem is it's not a perfect bill. It doesn't fix all the problems. As best as I can tell, the individual mandate is in it. So still, it is what it is. And I we're being told, right, we got the vice president of the United States saying, hey, hold on, hold on. We'll get to it. We're going to use the broad powers that were given the Department of Health and Human Services, right? You've got Tom Price in there, the Secretary of Health. Well, his predecessor, right, was Sebelius. You remember, Sebelius was given broad powers under the Affordable Care Act to make changes to the executive change to the legislation as needed. So I guess the theory the Republicans have here is that they're going to then tweak executively other things, but they need this initial piece of legislation to get it off the ground. I don't know. I'm going to reserve judgment until I see it, but look for some action tomorrow, and I'll bring you, of course, the late-breaking developments on that tomorrow night. Okay, when I come back after the news, I want to talk about Comey on the Hill. Boy, did he drop some great nugs. That's nuggets for those of you in Rancho Cucamonga. All right, love you all. Be right back after this. We got John Wolf with the news next.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
There we go. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And it is, what is it? Wednesday. Shoot, where's this week going? All right, we are live. 800-222-5222 if you want to be on the program. Also, you may email me if you'd like. Sam@samnation.com is my email. And I do check it during the program. And we'll respond to your questions or comments, should you send those in. Today, earlier in Washington, D.C., James Comey, erstwhile director of the FBI, appeared before the Senate committee looking into, well, there was a variety of questions asked. I won't say it was really intended to truss up Trump. I mean, that was the purpose behind it. And so, of course, the Democratic senators took one stab at it, one after another. It was pretty funny to watch. But I think the real juice for me, there's two parts. And one was there is Senator Kennedy, John Kennedy, Republican from Louisiana. He decided to ask Comey about Wiener. Let me clarify that. He decided to ask Comey about Anthony Wiener, who would be the spouse, the husband of one Huma Abedin, who was, as you know, remember Hillary Clinton's close aide during the campaign. And remember that whole question? Remember how it all got reopened? The whole probe into Hillary got reopened when? When poor Wiener, they found his, they got his, what did they do? They got his laptop for that other investigation. You know, he had been sending some pictures to an underaged Chiquita. I say Chiquita because, you know, he went by the name Carlos Danger. Well, at any rate, they're looking into that embarrassing scenario, and lo, behold, they have on his laptop thousands of emails from who else but Hillary Clinton. So, if in case you're wondering, see, remember it was told to us at the time that it was all because what was the issue? Oh, the Huma and Wiener were sharing a laptop, like most couples do. Well, there's a little more to it. Here is John Kennedy, Republican Louisiana, asking FBI Director James Comey. And he's asking him a question, and here's the exchange.
If someone sends me classified information, and I know or should know it's classified information, and I read it, have I committed a crime?
Potentially.
Has the person who sent me the information committed a crime?
Potentially, if they knew you didn't have an appropriate clearance and a need to know.
Was there classified information on former Congressman Wiener's computer?
Yes.
Who sent it to him?
His then-spouse, Huma Abedin, appears to have had a regular practice of forwarding emails to him for him, I think, to print out for her so she could then deliver them to the Secretary of State.
Did former Congressman Wiener read the classified material?
I don't think so. I don't think we've been able to interview him because he has pending criminal problems of other sorts. But my understanding is that his role would be to print them out as a matter of convenience.
All right. Maybe he was too busy sexting the Chiquitas. No. Look, think about this. Is so absurd. In the process, look, but they're trying to find the smoking gun on Trump, and I will get into that when we come back. But look at what they found here. Hillary is forwarding classified emails to Huma. Huma is sending those classified emails to her husband. Hillary knows Huma doesn't have clearance or has some limited clearance. Wiener's got no clearance. And that is not a sexual joke. All right, when we come back, this is totally criminal. These guys, all three of these goobers should be in jail. Receiving, sending classified info to people. Anyway, I sound like a broken record. Back right after this.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Okay, the other thing that was laid bare in the testimony on the Hill today, James Comey appearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Look, we now know what the entire theory is on the Trumpster's involvement with Russia. The Russians. No, it's good. You want to hear it? Oh, good. That's good. I got it here. I'll share it with you. So this is Senator Al Franken, Democrat, Minnesota, former comedian. Actually, I'll say still a comedian. Listen to this. He's asking Comey, what is your assessment of why the Russian government had a clear preference for President Trump, right? Because the whole idea here is that the Russians favored Trump. They helped him. They aided him. They put him in the White House. They made Hillary not campaign in Michigan. I mean, you know the whole drill. And here's Comey's response. Yep.
The intelligence community's assessment had a couple of parts with respect to that. One is he wasn't Hillary Clinton, who Putin hated and wanted to harm in any possible way. And so he was their opponent, so necessarily they supported him. And then also this second notion that the intelligence community assessed that Putin believed he would be more able to make deals, reach agreements with someone with a business background than with someone who had grown up in more of a government environment.
Yeah, so now immediately after this, I'm not cutting anything out because this is key. Franken thinks, well, there's got to be more. There's got to be more to it than he just hates Hillary and wants somebody who's flexible, okay, and asks this.
I'm curious about just how closely Russia followed the Kremlin playbook when it meddled in our democracy, specifically whether the Russians had a preference for President Trump because he had already been ensnared in their web of patronage. Web of patronage is a quote from their view. Trump's business interests would make him more amenable to cooperating with them, quote, more disposed to deal with Russia, as the IC report says.
That was not the basis for the IC's assessment.
Okay. Well, is it possible?
I see.
You don't want to speculate.
Yeah, because okay. Possible questions are hard for me to answer.
Yeah.
First of all, doesn't Franken sound like a toad with indigestion? I mean, you know, they have these stenographers, like court, you know, and they have stenographers, people who are typing in everything that's being said. This is stenographer abuse. It's so hard to listen to him. Anyway, he's – look, you understand. He is referring to the IC report, which is the intelligence community report on the Russian interference and hacking of the election. Okay. This was published, back early January. And he's trying to mischaracterize what's in the report. And Comey, who, by the way, no friend of Trump, right? He's the lefty guy, right? He's got his own agenda. But Comey's like, no, that wasn't the basis for the evaluation in the report. And just totally shut him down. And then did you hear him just go, anyway. See where they're trying to – this is it. Now, you want to know what else they're saying. I'll do this next segment. I'll tell you the next part. It's so good. Oh, the whole theory on why Trump is beholden to Putin. It's there. He explains it, and you'll die laughing. Okay. I'll tell you what you'll not die laughing over. If you get screwed by an insurance company. How was that transition? Was that pretty bad? That was pretty bad. You do not want to go at it alone. If you get into a car accident, if you're injured, if you're hurt, anything like that, you do not want to be unrepresented. You want to have a fighter in your corner, someone whose sense of justice will prevail over whatever disaster it is that you're facing. Okay. And that person is Sweet James Bergner, the lawyer we trust here on the program. He will fight for you, period. And the best part of it is it won't cost you a penny until he settles your claim. All right. And also, look, the consultation, the call, everything is free. So you call him. OK, you get a good consultation, figure out what's going on, get the straight scoop, get good advice, and you'll know what to do. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021 is the number, or visit James's website. SweetJames.com. All right, back right after this.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
And we're back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, so in case you're wondering, today and during the testimony, Al Franken, Senator Al Franken, he actually kind of gave us a clue here on what the Democrats are thinking of why Trump is beholden to the Russians. And all right, so it actually is all laid out in a question. I'm going to play it for you right now.
The president's son, Donald Trump Jr., told real estate developers in 2008 that, quote, Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets. He said, quote, we see a lot of money pouring in from Russia. This is a report on the family business. In 2013, President Trump held a Miss Universe pageant in Moscow, and the pageant was financed by a Russian billionaire who is close to Putin. And President Trump sold a Palm Beach mansion to a Russian oligarch for $95 million in 2008. That's $54 million more than he paid for it just 4 years prior. Those are three financial ties that we know of, and they're big ones.
That's it? Are you effing kidding me? So first of all, this is tough for us on the West Coast to understand. I'll give you the China example. In my neighborhood, a lot of big homes, all the big money's China. It's just it's unbelievable. People come in, cash offers, bam, they throw down millions of dollars for a house, done and done. If you're on the East Coast, if you're in New York City, I'm gonna tell you right now. The big money in New York City, I guess it's Florida too, but I know certainly New York. It's Russia. Russians, they're the ones buying the big condos, big high-rise. They're buying it all up. They've got that oil funny money or whatever it is. I mean, it's just they print it. I don't know what it is. But if your number one smoking gun is that Donald Trump Jr. went and told somebody, yeah, geez, there's a lot of Russian money in the economy and we seem to be – well, we're – you know, they're in the – Franken, they're in the real estate business. I hate to break it to you, but they're gonna sell stuff to Russians. It's gonna happen. The same way, and you know this, trust me, you know this, if you're in OC for some reason, Irvine, you know, you're selling big houses, you're selling them to Chinese people from China. Like, legit, that's, you're not in bed with the Chinese if you sell a house to a Chinese guy. Explain this to me. And as far as 95 million for a house, did you see Dave Geffen the other day? His Malibu, did you hear about this? 85 million he's selling his Malibu spread. And I'm looking at the aerial picture and it's like nice, but it's got, you know, it's PCH on one side, beach on the other. It's not even, I don't know, it doesn't even look that big to me. So I try to look at the property records here just to kind of compare it. And it looks like it sold for $10 million less, but that was in 2013. The market was a little bit soft. Look, I don't know. I mean, 2008, the market was super soft. You remember there was a real estate crash, right? So if you bought it in 2008 for a lot less money, I mean, for every house flipper out there, they did the same exact thing. If this is what the Democrats have on Trump and the Russians, what do they call this? A nothing burger? It's a nothing burger. All right, we're out of time. It's been fun. I'll be back tomorrow night at 7. Have a great night.
Say, what is this?
KABC.